live from Liverpool, we need to talk about ghosts with Kevin Eustace.
It is Sunday. It is time to talk about ghosts. Time for the Sunday sermon. Yes, I'm not alone. If you can hear someone munching in the background, that's Becca. She's eating a biscuit.
You can't wait for me to finish my biscuit.
Well, apparently not, because I didn't realise how long it takes you to eat a biscuit. I'm honest to God. Bloody hell. I eat biscuits whole in one like a goose.
That's nothing to be proud about, Kevin.
It really is. It really is. Anyway, guys, as you can see, Becca's joining us on today's episode.
Hi, guys.
She hasn't been on for a while, and we thought it was about time you returned.
Yes, we did, and I'm glad to be here.
Hooray! That's unlike you. I think she's lying. No, she's not. She did say she wanted to come on. Yeah, so have you been?
I'm okay, thank you.
Okay.
Well, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Today is a listener sent in story special.
Excellent.
Yes, so we're going to be reading out people's stories like a good old episode of old.
Lovely.
Yes.
Am I going to read some too?
Yes, of course. You're not just going to sit here and listen to me. I know that that's what you feel like you've done in the past.
Yeah, I think that's probably why I haven't been on for a while, because you just sit me there.
Yeah. Well, sorry about that. But yeah, we haven't done any interviews this week with people, so it's going to just be reading out people's stories.
Okay, do you want to interview me?
Well, have you got anything? Have you got a ghost story?
No.
Well, then no. I mean, tell us about your favourite biscuit that you spent an hour devouring.
Leibniz.
Well, we know what Leibniz is. So if you do want to come on the show and be interviewed via Zoom and go out live, well, it's not live, but, you know, get in touch, send your request to contact@talkaboutghosts.com. And that's the same address if you just want to email in your stories like we're going to read out today. So what is the email address, Becca?
contact@talkaboutghosts.com.
Talk about dope ghosts.
Yeah, all right.
Say it. What is it? Say it again.
Contact@talkaboutghosts.com.
Yes. Well, well done. Funny enough, we've just finished the Patreon episode. You didn't join me on that one.
No.
But this week's Patreon episode, I found a load of interviews from regional 70s TV in the UK,
mm-hmm.
where they go out to alleged haunted places and interview the people therein. And it was brilliant, dead good. And there's a guy in there who's a psychic, and he's the most well-spoken psychic I think I've ever had. And he's brilliant. So if you want to go and check that episode out, that's just gone up there. It's very funny, I think. Not me. I'm in the interview, as you were, the people getting interviewed. I make a few quips, as I tend to do. But the interviews themselves are brilliant and quite scary sometimes. You need to go over to patreon.com/we-need-to-talk-about-ghosts. Just like these wonderful people have done here. The guitar's out. Woo! And we have some fantastic, a plethora of new members for our Patreon club today. Yes, we have Jessica, Annie, Katie Roy, Danny Peterson and Martin Robinson. This is going to be a tough song, or is it? Let's see. Oh. Yeah. Jessica and Annie, Katie Roy and Danny Peterson have signed up too. Patreon and so has Martin Robinson, and they're gonna listen to all my extra shows and a couple of videos. And maybe they may win a signed buck too. Ended it on a 7th. Thank you, you wonderful new Patreons. Patreon seems to be the place to be if you're a fan of the show. Yes, it does. There's over 100 extra episodes. And today's show, as I say, is me regaling some 70s TV interviews. It's highly comical, too. The interviews are, not me. I'm semi-funny. And we're also giving away prizes over there, etc. Anyway, get yourself over to patreon.com/we-need-to-talk-about-ghosts. It's the place to be if you're like me. And the show. Okay then, guys. Thank you very much. So, Becca, we're about to get scared.
Okay.
If you're up for that. You're up for getting scared?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Why not? Try me.
Oh, I say. How kinky. So, our first story comes in from Steph.
Hi, Steph.
Hi, Steph. And Steph says, I've been listening to your podcast since the very beginning and have thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's nice.
That is very nice, isn't it? I have thought long and hard about my stories as I felt they may be too long for the podcast.
Never.
Never. What? Never. Or that they may not be scary enough. Well, Becca, you can read them ones. However, from listening to the listener episodes, everyone has experienced the varying level of spookiness and hope that someone out there may have had other little moments like these. Especially my Nan's story, as I feel it brings such closure and comfort in a time of deep sadness.
Okay.
Interesting. Please keep up your amazing work, and I hope that you love these stories. Smiley face emoticon. Thank you very much. And I'm sure that we will enjoy these stories. She writes, please feel free to reword it to be more coherent. No, we won't, because it is your story, and we will be able to get through it regardless. I've read this email several times, but it never hurts to have an outside perspective. And then there's a description of the house that I think comes up in a lot of these stories that I'll just do.
Okay.
And then I'll give it to you, Becca, for story one of Steph's.
Thanks.
So, Steph writes, my parents' house was built in the 80s. It was originally two flats that shared the ground floor hallway as a means to get up to the first floor flat. I feel it's important to state the layout of the ground floor and the first floor before continuing. The ground floor has a central hallway that spans the full length of the house, roughly six steps from the front door. The internal door into the garage and the bathroom are on the right. The living room is on the left. Two steps further down the hallway is the staircase on the right, and opposite, on the left, is the dining room. In brackets, it had been redecorated to be used as a second living room. The kitchen is at the end of the hallway. The staircase is in two parts. The first part is 17 steps. There is a small landing space in the middle of the staircase where a large window overlooks the garden. The staircase then does a 180 and is only three steps and opens onto a large landing. So that's like my dad's.
Mm-hmm.
The landing itself is a square space upon where my parents' bedroom and office is on the right side. My room and the spare room on the left, and the bathroom is straight ahead. Thank you for bearing with me on that description of the layout. I think it's important for the story. Okay?
Okay.
So, Becca, as we do. Now, I need to remind you that the way we currently do this is we don't stop mid-story for any reason.
For any reason.
Yeah. I was going to stop that there to say, to have a little chat with you and say, listen, Becca, this is how we do it. No, but you know, previously, like right at the start, we used to stop in between the stories and be like, hey, how's she done that?
Throwing comments and whatnot.
Throwing comments. We don't do that anymore. We save everything like that to the end.
Okay, but that also means you're not going to interrupt me, doesn't it?
Well, you lucky, lucky thing, Almaz. Yes, it does. But it means we'll discuss it at the end so that people can have an uninterrupted story and then we discuss.
I understand.
Okay. Because I had a tendency to go off track.
I understand.
Just like now. Okay. There you go. It's called, well, I'll let you give the title.
Thanks. It's called The Polite Watcher. Growing up, there was always a sense of something there in certain spots of the house. You couldn't put your finger on it fully, just something. It never scared me, as my mum and dad also had the same experiences, and we'd always been open about discussing them, so it never felt weird or uneasy. Now, like most houses, there are some areas of the house where the floorboards always creaked. It didn't matter which room you were in, the floorboards creaked. It became the norm to instantly know who was in what room upstairs by the sound of the footsteps and how the floorboards creaked. The same way you could always tell who was going up or down the stairs as some of the steps creaked. However, it was a regular occurrence to hear footsteps, but hear the groan of the floorboards and hear someone moving from the spare bedroom, then into the landing, and then into the office, and back again. This would happen throughout the day, but would be particularly active in the evening. My mum, dad and I would be sat in the living room and would hear it regularly. We would even make comments of, oh, he's going for a walk again. Now, the only other person in the house, apart from the three of us, was a very sassy tortoiseshell cat named Lulu. And there is no way a cat could make floorboards groan in this manner unless she suddenly developed a love for wearing heavy workman-style boots and had gained 15 pounds overnight. I had a desk in my bedroom that was positioned opposite the door, so when on the computer, your back is to the door and therefore to the landing area. I would always subconsciously close my door if I went on my computer, as if the door was left open, I would have an overwhelming feeling of a male presence on the landing looking into my room. I would hear the creaking of the floorboards, he doing the same route. You never felt threatened, only aware that you had company. Now, as I got older and had boyfriends come over, naturally you would want some privacy. One occasion I had reconfigured the furniture, so my bed was now opposite the door against the wall. My boyfriend was sat on the bed and I was tidying stuff away in my wardrobe when he got up to use the bathroom. He couldn't get out the room. The doorknob would not budge. I laughed and made a weak as a baby comment, but when I tried it, it would not budge. We each tried with all our weight to twist and pull the door open, but it would not move a muscle. I called my dad, who was downstairs, and found it hilarious that I had to call him on my phone to come upstairs and open the door, but when he attempted to open the door from the other side and still couldn't get it open, he huffed and shuffled down the stairs to grab some tools, and I could hear him, thanks to the staircase, creaking. I stood against the door, and I cannot say why I did this, and I put it down to when people make comments when flustered, like, come on, please work. But something subconsciously made me say, please, open the door now. I'll leave the door open when he's here. I sighed and twisted the handle once more, and it slowly unclicked from the door frame and opened. Needless to say, everyone else believed that my door mechanism just needed oiling, but I believe my gentleman ghost was the source of this. He had also freaked out my boyfriend on numerous occasions through the night. I've been awoken to my boyfriend whispering to me, I don't want to freak you out, but he's in the doorway. My boyfriend would explain that he would hear creaking and then look towards the landing if the door was left open, to see such a dark, intense shape in the doorway. I would always shrug it off and say, oh, he's just checking up on me, leave him alone. I'm a firm believer that the spirit that resides in my parents' house has a male presence, and I like to believe he just wants to check up on me and ensure I'm okay. Or he is trying to take the role of a protective father when teenage boyfriends are involved. Either way, I appreciate it. My watcher also tends to stand at the top of the stairs by the window and look down the staircase. You would catch him there in the form of an intensely dark, human-sized shadow. You never see any features, such as arms, legs, or face. Just a dark, human-sized shadow. Either he looks out to the window, or likes to watch you walk into the kitchen. You would see him in the corner of your eye, or if you turned to fully look up to the top of the stairs, it would be present for just a second and go up the remaining steps to the landing. My theory for this watcher is that because the house was two flats originally, maybe he was a past resident of the first floor flat? Continuing his little routines, like looking out onto the garden, walking between rooms, and just living his version of the life. He has never bothered me or my parents, and I experienced his presence for the 18 years I lived at my parents'. We've all agreed, if we don't bother him, he won't bother us, and we can all live in harmony.
Amazing. I tell you what is the most terrifying part of that. The boyfriend saying, I don't want to scare you, but he's in the doorway. I'm not being funny. If you don't want to scare someone, you don't mention that. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to scare you, but the devil's here. Night, back to bed.
I know. And interestingly, so he obviously didn't like the door being closed. When the door was, he was like, right, you keep it fine then, we'll keep it closed. You want that door closed? We'll keep it closed. Yeah, yeah. I'll lock you in.
Yeah. If your boyfriend's going to be here, you're having the door open.
Yeah.
Did we have any comments about who she thought that was? Just previous a male resident. Present. A previous resident looking out on her.
Were you not listening?
Yes, of course. I was paying attention.
I wonder if the cat ever saw the presence.
Well, funny enough, you should mention that, actually, because I was reading about an article yesterday about can cats see ghosts?
Of course you were.
Yeah, well, of course I was, yeah. And it was saying that, like, all of the benefits that cats have in terms of looking at ghosts over us, like they can hear three frequencies higher or five frequencies higher than us. Mm-hmm. Do you know when a cat hears a sound, right? It can locate that sound within 5 degrees.
Well, like where it is.
Yeah. So for example, if I click like behind you, you know it's behind you, but that's all you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas a cat will know within, like talking about a 360 degree area, it will know it within a 5 degree target where that noise came from, no matter whether it was in front, behind, or anything. It's what makes them such good hunters. Mm-hmm. Also, they can see different like ultraviolet sorts of stuff and different colours.
Because they haven't got very good close range eyesight, have they?
No.
They've got decent. Well, I don't know about decent, but they've got the eyesight from a distance isn't a problem, but very close range.
Yeah, very close range is an issue.
Not good.
I mean, yesterday I set up a video camera. I set up my old iPhone, which has got that motion sensor camera software on it, and set it up and we went out, didn't we? And I said, I'm going to see if I can, because what happened was yesterday, it is a new thing from the flat. Just a little rumble in my stomach. I was playing video games. Becca, you were downstairs then, wasn't you? Oh, you were out. I don't know.
I don't know.
Either way, we've got like a round table, which we're doing this podcast from now in the living room. And I was sat at that table, but facing the TV, playing video games. And I had my elbow resting on the table as I was playing. And there was a vibration through the table that made me spin round. As if the cat, the neighbor's cat, had jumped onto or off of the table. You know, that like small vibration, but something definite.
Yes, like when something knocks it or something, because it's not the most
stable. Exactly, yeah. And it made me spin around and go and look. I was like, what was that? And I couldn't see anything out of place. The cat wasn't up here. Carried on playing. Then again, it happened again. And I was like, you know, because I'm facing away from the table and the table is behind me. I thought, I wish you could see what's moving on this table. Yeah. So then that got me thinking, I'm going to set up the video camera to see, you know, that.
So where was the neighbour's cat while this was happening?
I don't know. It was downstairs. I don't know. It wasn't up here. So we set up the phone and then we went out, went on a big walk, didn't we? Tried to get 10,000 steps in. And when I come back, it had caught 14 videos
and
of movement.
So excited.
And I was so excited. Yeah, the neighbour's cat was 11 of them.
Yeah, about 8 of the neighbour's cat.
One of them was you coming back to get your bag.
Yeah, to get a bag. Well, 3 of them were you.
Well, one of them was me leaving. One of them was me coming back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, all in all, nothing moved. And it turns out that the neighbour's cat can entertain herself perfectly fine. Like, she normally, we always like, why doesn't she want to play? And you're like, got toys out and she's just on the floor, like lying on her side. It turns out when you're not there, she gets a ball out. She starts knocking it around, running around like a lunatic.
Yeah, it's really cute.
So I had to tell her off. I was like, listen.
Why did you tell her off?
Because I'm looking for ghosts.
You better not have told her off. And playing with her own toys.
Well, anyway. So thank you for story one, Steph. I'm going to now read story two. And story two is called Please Change the Channel Watcher.
Ooh.
Or Please Place the Channel. Please Change the Channel Watcher. So I don't know whether...
You've lost me.
As in like, because there's no comma in the title, I don't know whether it's Please Change the Channel Watcher.
As in the person watching the channel.
Yeah,
or
Please Change the Channel Watcher.
Addressed to the watcher, yeah. I see. I think the latter.
Well, we'll see. Here's the story. Now, as mentioned in the previous story, my parents' house used to be two separate flats. On the ground floor, there have been a couple of instances whereby it feels like someone is watching you. But this individual likes to cause more unease. I've never quite sensed what type of presence this is. I'm not sure if it's male or female, or if it actually means ill will, or it's simply bored and sometimes needs a bit of excitement in the afterlife. During the school holidays when I was 15, I would be left at home all day whilst my parents were working. I would have a little chore list to complete, such as unload the dishwasher or hoover the ground floor, the usual boring things that teenagers find deeply inconvenient and shocking to be asked to help with. I would do chores like most teens, then sit and watch TV and snack anything good in the cupboards. In the living room, there are two sofas in the formation of an L shape, a two-seater and a three-seater. On one occasion, I turned the TV on with the remote and dropped it on the sofa before walking over to the other side of the living room and sat on the three-seater sofa and began watching the TV and relaxing. My cat sauntered in to join me and then, suddenly out of the corner of my eye, I noticed something dart towards me. I naturally flinched in that split second. My cat turned into a bog brush and nope the fucked out of the room in an instant. I felt a heavy thud next to me on the sofa. I turned and saw the remote control next to me on the sofa. I looked over at the two-seaters and an all-encompassing sense of dread filled me. I'd never felt so rooted to the spot as I did then. Every ounce of me wanted to move and walk out of the room, but I would not for the life of me get my legs to cooperate. As I turned to look at the remote once more, and then, the TV volume went down. I could see on the TV, the little volume icon telling you the level your sound is on, descending to zero. There was no dark shadow in the room with me, there was nothing visible in the room, except for me that could have done that. After what seemed like an eternity, and no doubt a rush of adrenaline, I got up and walked out of the living room, closed the door, picked up the cat, and walked upstairs to my room, only remembering to breathe once I had reached the top of the stairs. I did not leave my room until I heard my dad's car in the driveway several hours later.
Ooh.
So there you go. Someone messing around with the remote control. So I've never heard that saying, the cat turned into a bog brush and fucked the nope out of the room.
No, but I can... It does... give a clear imagery.
Yeah, yeah. So all heckles on end and standing upright.
Yeah. The thing that I would question about that story, not to kind of question Steph, but
the thing I
don't understand.
You know, you'd be the ever skeptical you.
Never. I mean, maybe this is just sheer laziness on my part, but I feel like this is the case for most people.
Okay.
Never, ever have I picked up a remote to turn the TV on and left it somewhere else where I wouldn't be sat. Because if I needed to change the channel or change the volume or anything else, I would have to get up. I would always have it with me. I don't know why you'd put it on a different couch and sit on another one.
Well, could that be because you're bone idle?
Yes, but isn't everyone?
Yeah, to be fair,
on that level. Like, no one thinks, oh, I'll leave that there because I don't mind getting up again in a minute if I need to.
But
you
what
know,
if,
when you sit down to watch the TV, you sit down,
what if
you,
it was
you
a film?
Take your drink with
what
you.
What if a film was starting and you were like, right, I'm settled now. I don't need that. I don't need that.
I just don't know where you'd put it out of reach. Well, I've never put it
okay,
out of reach.
Okay, well, I will, if we're playing a skeptical tennis, I will hit back a bit of a belief thing for you. I tell you what I did find quite convincing because she mentions corner of the eye phenomena there. Mm-hmm. It says something darted towards her out of the corner of her eye. Interestingly, that her reaction was to flinch, which would imply, I mean, I've flinched on occasion with corner of the eye stuff, but it's normally been something when I've flinched. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Corner of the eye is normally, is that something there? And you turn around, you look. When you flinch, it's because something is coming at you.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting visceral reaction that she's
well,
had there.
I think there's a difference to corner of the eye phenomenon, as you usually say it, and something coming towards you, because usually if you just see something flicker,
yeah,
in the, you know, at the side, that would be your usual corner of the eye phenomenon. But I think, of course, you'd flinch if you thought something was coming towards you, if that's what you saw.
Yeah, you would. But I'm just saying that that seems to be a quite visceral and, what's the word, authenticating experience for me. If somebody says, oh, I keep seeing something at the corner of my eye, that's different than, oh, I keep ducking down because something's coming at my head.
Yeah. I mean, I flinch at everything, so I'm probably not the best.
Yeah, you do.
Judge this. Like any a loud noise or anything, I shudder at.
So does the neighbour's cat, I've noticed. I think that used to, like, moulding into the one being.
We are, yeah. We're very in tune.
You are very in tune. Anyway, Becca, you now have the pleasure of reading this story, and this story is called The Dark Shadow Who Likes to Push You.
Oh, dear. Thank you. Dark shadow who likes to push you. I've only had one occasion whereby I genuinely feared for my safety and felt that a presence wanted to do me harm. Now, for a little background context, I am from a big, loud, football-mad Scouse family. Any excuse for a gathering results in the whole family, and I mean all of the family, will descend. When Liverpool are playing on the TV, it was no exception. Whoever had the TV subscription to watch the match, that's whose house the family would descend on, with food and beer in large supply. This time it was at my parents' house. My mum would be in the kitchen, preparing the food and ensuring that dinner was ready for straight after the match, but also that snacks were available at half-time. My dad would be preparing in the living room, with every chair available in the house. We're talking dining chairs, office chairs, ottomans, and even the garden chairs we used to ensure every bum had a seat to watch the match. On average, between the two living rooms, there would be 20 plus people packed in like sardines. It was great, and the atmosphere is always loud and energetic. My job was to always take the coats of the family members arriving, take them upstairs, and place them on my parents' bed, out of the way. I did this a million times before, and this evening was no exception. My nan and grandad were the last to arrive. I took their coats, and after being hugged and smooched on the cheek as a nan does, I went upstairs to put their coats on the bed. I did not turn the staircase or landing light on to do these trips, like the hallway, kitchen and living room lights were on, so it illuminated the staircase and landing enough to see where I was going. Once I placed the coats on the bed, I turned to walk back into the landing. I noticed a strange change in the atmosphere on the landing. Do you know when you can feel a thunderstorm about to happen? That sudden change in the air? That's how it felt. The landing went cold, and I could no longer hear the noise of all my family downstairs. Suddenly, even with the glow from the downstairs lights climbing up the staircase, I felt very alone and scared. I could sense that I was being watched. However, unlike my usual friendly watcher, this felt menacing, like it was glaring at me, watching me like an animal stalking its prey from behind me. My heart started to beat, and I could feel myself start to tense up. Then it prodded me. Whatever it was, it slowly yet firmly prodded the centre of my back forward towards the first half of the staircase. I slowly stumbled towards the top of the staircase and grabbed the banister. The feeling of something right behind me was overwhelming. I could feel my fight or flight instinct screaming at me to move and go back downstairs to the safety of people and light. I made it down the first few steps and stood next to the staircase window looking down at the second half of the staircase. I could see the hallway at the bottom of the stairs, yet fear had just taken over every muscle in me. My mind went numb and I couldn't think of anything except, it is behind me. However, before I had the chance to move on my own accord, whatever it was violently shoved me quickly from behind and my foot slipped from the first step and I stumbled halfway down the stairs. I grabbed my hand out and took hold of the banister and stopped myself from falling down the full length of the staircase. I flew myself down the remaining steps, heart beating out of my chest, tears swelling up in my eyes, and fear like I have never felt before. It was such a surreal sight. I could see into both the living rooms from the bottom of the staircase. My family was all around, laughing, cheering, and talking. It was light and warm, but I was stood motionless like a statue in the hallway and no one noticed. It was like I was looking into their life and I was invisible. However, after a few seconds, I clicked back into reality and felt the warmth of the house, the noise, and realised that it was safe now among everyone. I turned and looked back up the staircase. I wish I hadn't. There, by the window, was a pitch-black shadowy form, taller than the window. But I was confused as to how it could be so dark up there, considering the sheer amount of light with the whole of the ground floor lit up, how even the climbing light did not do anything to affect the shadow. The shadow gave off such a dark feeling. I knew that it was not my usual gentleman watcher. It floated to the right and disappeared up the remaining steps to the landing. I turned and was shook back into life by a nan who wanted to know all about how I was and if I wanted to join her on the sofa while the match was on. I sat zoned out that entire football match, making light convocation with my nan. She can talk for Britain, so it's easy to let her have the conversation for us both, all the while thinking about what the hell had just happened on the staircase. I never felt such an entity in the house again. I like to believe my usual watcher dealt with it as he continues to be present even to this day. My mum will occasionally say he's up to his usual routine, and I have seen and heard him when I visit. But whatever it was, I want to have words with it, but I know at the moment I'd be too scared.
Wow. Ooh. That is amazing. And there's a few things that jump out there. One, this is in Liverpool.
I know, I didn't realise that with the earlier stories.
Yeah, neither did I.
That was really hard to get past without interrupting.
So, Steph, you need to get in touch and say to me via email that you've convinced your parents to leave the house and that we can come round and investigate.
I would rather go round to one of these family gatherings. That sounds such fun.
That was the next thing I was going to say. You know what? There was a part of me that like got choked up a bit there because I was thinking, God, remember when you used to be able to do that? How fun is it? Like, you know the whole you don't know what you've got till it's gone sort of thing. I used to like cry out of going to many family occasions. I'd be like, I'll be arsed. Mm. But now, because you haven't seen anyone in years,
I know,
literally a year, then you're kind of like, yeah, let's go around and watch anything.
And for something as simple as like watching the match, but it does get everyone in, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. So that was a lovely little part of the story that I really enjoyed that. Yeah. But terrifying because also, you know what is really interesting? And you may not know this, but... this is to Becca that may not know this. You guys might know this. But you know the sighting of this massive shadow?
Yeah.
There's a common theme or thread that when there's an evil spirits seem, for some reason, to be able to, one, be massive. So, like, they can be, like, 9 foot tall. Mm. You know, that it's a common thread.
Yeah.
And also, they can absorb, like, both sound, light, and anything. So, you know, like, where she's saying she doesn't know how it was so dark considering it was the light that should have been coming through the window.
Yeah.
It's in the Amityville case, although I poo-pooed these researchers. I forgot the names now. The Warrens. Mrs. Warren would say in the Amityville case that it was amazing that the evil managed to cloak and envelope the sound of the rifles that were fired. Because when you see the Amityville film in the film, or the Amityville house in the film, it's like on its own in acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, there's like a house like 3 feet away from it. So it's a detached house.
Should have heard the
gunshots. Yeah. So, but no one heard a single gunshot. They heard the dog barking, but they didn't hear like these 5 shots or 6 shots getting rang out. Mm-hmm. And she said it's because evil can deal with like physics and hide them in a way. It can hide light. It can hide sight. It can hide sound.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So that was a great little story, that, and terrifying. Great description about saying being downstairs and feeling like you were in like another reality and you were looking in. It sounds like a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like as in like an actual nightmare. You know those nightmares? Have you ever had a nightmare where... I used to have a nightmare, for example, where I'd be on one side of the street and my mum and dad would be on the other side of the street, unaware that I was lost. Mm-hmm. And I'd be shouting, but they wouldn't hear me. They'd carry on like they couldn't hear me.
Mm.
So that's what it sounds like, you know, that sort of like no one's aware of you. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting how she said, I hope my usual guy dealt with him.
Yeah.
Imagine if they had a fight. It's two like shadowy figures.
A ghost fight, yeah.
Oi, what are you doing? Are you scaring my Steph?
Yeah. Coming in, there's stuff all over the floor. Oh. We've got a poltergeist. No, you had a fight, actually.
I mean, the other thing to think about, Steph, is had you done anything to annoy that guy and you'd really wound him up and he just shoved you?
So it was the Watcher.
Well, maybe. Like, maybe you'd done something to, like, you know, everyone has a bad day. The everyone nicest guy in the world has a bad day. Maybe he was just like, oi.
Yeah, it's a good point. Maybe. Okay. So this, I think, is your last story, Steph. And I think it's the last story that we're going to have time for on this show. Only a little compared to the previous two-hour-long episodes, but standard time for normal episodes, I guess. Mm-hmm. But this is Steph's final story. And thank you, Steph, ever so much for sending these in. Don't forget, if you've got a story that you want to send in for us to read out, send it to contact@talkaboutghosts.com. Or if you want to come on the show and talk to me in person, and we'll do a mega-long episode, which we're all for, send it to the same address, contact@talkaboutghosts.com. But this is Steph's final story, and I believe this will be the heart-wrenching one, or heart-warming one. And it's called Pops Came to Say Goodbye. My nan has often told me this story, which sparked my interest in the supernatural from a very young age. I believe you told a story like this in the past. I do firmly believe that it's only ever meant to be a caring and sweet encounter, if only for a fleeting moment. So, back to the story. My great-grandfather was known as Pops to everyone. Family and friends had always referred to him like this, and it is just part and parcel to continue to call him this even now. He was a big drinker, and was a regular at the local pub in Anfield. Like many men in the bygone era, men wearing hats such as a trilby was commonplace, and my great-grandfather was no exception. When he passed away, friends and family gathered and it was a huge affair, with many coming to pay their last respects, in brackets, but also no doubt mourning the loss of the income that the pub would now lose. My nan, being a young woman at the time of his passing, helped with the funeral plans and the wake afterwards, which was held at the local pub he frequented so much. She explained to me that she had felt so upset, so lost, and that the natural feeling of, what do I do now without him here, was prevalent. As a sign of respect, the pub landlord had placed Pop's trilby hat on the top of the old television set, which was set in the corner of the pub, no doubt for the regulars to watch the football or horse racing. My nan then explained that once all the mourners, extended family and friends had left, she was tidying away the leftovers of food and putting the chairs and tables back to their original spots in the pub, when, out of the corner of her eye, she saw something dart towards her. She flinched, as you naturally would, and saw Pop's trilby hat lying on the ground right in front of her. She explained that she was not terrified, more, what the hell, and attempted to rationalise it as a gust of wind must have knocked it off. However, the speed in which this hat had travelled from the TV set where it had been placed throughout the wake, where no one had touched it, to now right in front of her on the floor, deeply uneased her. She picked it up and turned to walk towards the TV set to place it back on top, when she saw him. Sitting on the seat that was known to be Pop's favourite place to sit in the pub was Pop himself. My nan saw him, 100% in the flesh. No ghostly style apparition, no distorted face, no pale expression. Pops was sat in his seat, looking at her as if he was still alive and waiting to talk to her and have a pint. She explains to me the second she met his gaze, a sense of love and warmth came over her. She did not feel scared or upset, and she instantly felt calm. She placed his hat back on the TV set and cautiously sat in the seat next to him. Looking at each other, my nan said, "I love you. I miss you. How do I cope without you here?" To which my nan said he smiled, gave her a look and said, "I'm proud of you, our kid." He gently evaporated until there was no sight of him in the chair. My nan has fondly told this story 1,000 times, and she always smiles when telling us this, as she is adamant it was her father just wanting to check in before leaving or moving into the next room, checking that she was okay and that she knew he was going to be okay. And I like to believe that you can do that with a loved one, even if it's just for a brief moment. 50 years on, it still brings her comfort that he cared for his little girl. Thank you for reading my experiences. They've shaped how I think about what happens after we leave this plane, and if there are layers to existence that we might just be unable to comprehend, or as you've mentioned in a previous episode, when we love to rationalise everything. put what we see, feel, and experience in a little box with a label to make us feel better. We lose that childlike wonder, which helps us cope with the unexplained. Cheers, Steph.
That's so sad.
Isn't that so sad, but so lovely?
Yeah.
It is so sad, yet so lovely. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. What made me almost like get a shiver at the start, well, towards the end, was where she said something darted towards her, because that's exactly what she described in the thing. And then when she says the person flinched, again, I was like, oh, is this the same ghost? But obviously not.
Yeah, not. Was it the hat?
Yeah, it was the hat coming towards her. Yeah. But interestingly as well, like which says, you know, back in the bygone day, they used to wear trilbies. My granddad used to wear a trilby, didn't he?
Yeah.
And like, he only died last year,
year before last.
And like, he'd still, up until like 8 weeks before his death, he'd still go around and put a bet on with a trilby on, would he?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a lovely little story there, Steph. What a nice story to end on. Thoughts, Rebecca?
I think it's really nice that it gave Yinan comfort.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Do you think there's an argument that when something, and I think this, it could be argued, I'm not discounting that this happened, I believe it did happen, but, and I also believe that your perception is real to you. Like I've said before, I'm looking at you now. I'm also looking at a lamp in the like behind you. I can't touch that lamp, but I can see that lamp. And so to me, that lamp's real, 100% real.
Yeah.
So what I was going to say is, do you think there's a level where you get so stressed and so emotionally het up, you could hallucinate that scenario to help like you, like a coping mechanism?
Like it's your subconscious helping you grieve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if so, but this is my point, in the same way I can't touch that lamp, but it's real to me. If I see, like my mum, for example, stood here now, why would I automatically discount my mother but not discount the lamp in the same breath? If they're both as real as each other to my eyes.
You went in a different direction than I thought you were going to go. But what I was going to say is, the argument against kind of skeptics is, if it's bringing someone comfort, does it matter?
No.
The facts of whether it happened or whether it was your subconscious helping you out with your grief.
Yeah.
And the answer really is no, I think.
Yeah, you know, the answer is
if
no.
If someone believes something and it's helping them and it's bringing them comfort, it doesn't matter, does it, whether it was real or not. If it was real, the point is it was real to them, so.
Yeah, and it helps you get through a tough situation.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Mm. Well, Steph, that's magnificent. Thank you. You've made up the entirety of this show. It's very rare that we get somebody who sends one email in which can, they have such a good mix of stories within, you know, along different tacks. Which is just what we had there. So don't forget, guys, if you want to get your story read out or speak to me in person, then send an email to contact@talkaboutghosts.com. If you want to go and sign up to Patreon, well, today, as I said earlier, we're listening to interviews in haunted warehouses and workplaces from the 70s, from regional TV in the 70s. It's very funny, as in the interviews are funny, but also very scary too. And on today's Patreon episode, we also announced the winner of our signed book competition.
Ooh.
Which is very good. So we'll be doing that over on Patreon right now. And if you want to go and sign up to Patreon, go to www.patreon.com/we-need-to-talk-about-ghosts. We will be announcing another competition next week also. I don't think there's anything left to say, Becca.
No, I don't think so.
No. Okay, then you wonderful, wonderful, beautiful, dare I say, sexy people. As Jerry Springer said in the 90s, take care of yourselves and each other. And we will see you next Wochen. Won't we?
What's Wochen?
It's German for week. I mean, it's my German for week. It might not be. Who knows?
You just made it up.
Okay then, guys. Tatty bye.
Bye, guys.